In 2019, just prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, 19% of Americans experienced a mental illness, equivalent to nearly 50 million Americans. Over 60% of youth with major depression do not receive any mental health treatment. Stats are from Mental Health America. You're listening to the SoPod Network. In today's episode, we are celebrating the month of May as Mental Health Awareness Month. Southern Company Executive and Internal Communications Director, Crystal Woods, sits down with Shanti Dawes, founder of Silence the Shame, to discuss her high-profile career in the music industry and how she conquered her own mental health issues and continues to help others through her organization by speaking out against the stigma that could go along with seeking help. Welcome to the SoPod Network. Today we have a music industry legend and mental health advocate, Shanti Dawes, in the studio. Welcome.
Hi.
How you doing?
I am great. Southern Company in the building, ATL. Yes, I'm so excited to be here.
Let me tell you, I'm just uber excited because I know we're going to talk a lot today about mental health.
Yes.
But, you know, we got to give people roses in doing life, right? And for those listening that may not know your name, mm-hmm. and know what you have done and how you've inspired music culture, I want you to give us a flavor of who you are. You know, I'm going to give you some of the things I know, and I want you to fill in the blanks.
Okay.
You went to Syracuse?
Yes. I bleed orange.
Okay, you bleed orange. You majored in film, radio, television.
Mm-hmm. Television, radio, and film.
All right, you did that. And then you start working for some big names. And you got to tell us how you got into this industry of how you start working in the music business with LaFace. And I think you've been at Arista, Columbia, and Universal Motown.
Yes, absolutely. So again, thank you. It's an absolute honor to be on the podcast today. I am an original ATLian.
Me too.
Hashtag old Atlanta, as we like to say. And I got my start right after Syracuse University. But honestly, I started interning while I was at Syracuse. I started interning at Capitol Records here in Atlanta. Just 4 months out of graduating, I got hired at LaFace Records. First record I ever worked was Players Ball from Outkast.
Okay.
Not too
legendary.
Shabby. Yes. And then I got to go on tour with Toni Braxton and TLC and Usher. So got to market all of their careers, which was fantastic. I did that for about 8.5 years. And then when L.A. and Babyface sold the company, I followed L.A. Reid up to New York when he replaced Clive Davis and started working at Arista Records. And from there, I moved over to Columbia Records and got to even market for Prince while at Columbia, which was pretty cool, and work with Jermaine Dupri and a lot of his artists. And then ended up at Universal Motown as executive vice president of marketing and got to work with Erykah Badu, did some stuff for Stevie Wonder, Busta Rhymes, a lot of cool artists.
So when people hear that, you know, this entertainment industry, and before I joined the wonderful Southern Company, I worked in sports.
Okay.
Now talk about a day of, what did your day look like interacting with artists?
And gosh.
What did you do?
A day in the life of Shanti as a marketing executive. Wow. So getting up at 7 a.m. and going into the office, because I lived in Manhattan, and being in the office from probably 10 to 6 or 10 to 7, and then taking meetings with managers and executives or touring agents, and then sometimes having to go to a concert or to a showcase, stopping by the studio, taking more meetings after work, drinks and stuff like that. So it was nonstop. And I was on and off of airplanes all the time, going to award shows or video shoots or photo shoots. So it was quite... extensive. And my days would be sometimes 18, 20-hour days. And it was tough at times. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But it was a wonderful life. But I also didn't know what self-care meant. And I really didn't have the tools that I needed, right, to have healthy coping mechanisms when I was really at the top of my game working in music.
Yeah, let's jump into that because... You know, when we look at today, pressures, and no matter where you work, if you're an accountant, an engineer, a music industry executive, we have lives and we have professional lives. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about 18-hour days, which most people don't know, but still in an 8-hour day or 9-hour day, and you go home and take care of your respective family members, you know, self-care is important. Mm-hmm. But as we think about the world today, COVID, we have inflation, we're having mass shootings, and I think mental health is one of those things we don't talk about.
Right.
You know, tell us, you know, just go through kind of how you coped and what you found out in your career. I know we'll get into how you founded your organization, but talk about some of the things you went through in your professional or personal life that made you realize, hey, something's going on here.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So I'll first start by sharing that my father died by suicide when I was 7 months old. This is when I was, you know, living at home in Atlanta. So my mom was forced to raise three young kids on her own. It was very difficult. Growing up in African-American culture, we didn't talk about therapy. It wasn't a thing. We were really told not to share our secrets, especially around our health and wellness. And I really buried a lot of those feelings. And I can remember once I got old enough to realize that my father, you know, was deceased and he wasn't coming back and that he actually took his own life. It was really a hard pill for me to swallow. So I got mad and angry. And I told my mom, like, don't bring up his name. I don't want to talk about him. And so, again, I buried a lot of those feelings. So fast forward, you know, I had a pretty good childhood. I had some great uncles who kind of, you know, filled in the gap of my dad not being there. But I still often wonder, like, you know, what had really happened. But again, we didn't really talk about it. So when I started working in the entertainment industry and, you know, dealing with some of the stresses that come with working in a high-paced and high-profile industry, again, I didn't have the tools to cope. I remember it being the year 2000. I was senior director of marketing at Arista Records. I had a new boss that was very condescending. It was a little bit of a toxic work environment. And I had a meltdown at the airport. I literally was at LaGuardia Airport, headed to Miami for an MTV shoot to work with Babyface. And I just started crying, couldn't really control my feelings. I was on the phone talking to my sister and I was like, you know, I don't know what's going on with me. I'm not eating. I'm breaking out. She was like, you're stressed out. You know, it's a lot going on. And she was like, you know, you really need to deal with it and see someone. And I ended up saying to my boyfriend at the time, I was like, you know, I can't handle this anymore. Maybe I should just kill myself. That was 22 years ago.
Wow.
And it scared me to death because it was the first time that I ever uttered those words, maybe I should just kill myself. And because there was a lot of unresolved trauma, right, not dealing with my dad's suicide, that I was starting to kind of unpack the layers of that onion, right, to really kind of get to the root cause of some of the trauma. So she was like, listen, suicide is not an option for you, and I need you to go see a therapist. You got to get help. So I saw a therapist for the first time in my late 30s, and I probably was in therapy for about 3 months. And, you know, it went okay. And then I just, you know, thrust myself back into my career. I thought I was okay. So fast forward, I was at Columbia for 4 years, and then I moved over to Motown. And then in 2009, I was really starting to deal with just a lot of depression. I would literally go into my office. I had this fabulous corner office with a flat screen TV, a sofa, and all that great stuff. But I'm a worker, right? I'm there early, staying at the office late. I would go into the office, Crystal, and take a nap the middle of the day. And that's just not who I was as a person, you know, because work meant everything to me. And I think my assistant knew something was going on. And I would say to her, like, I don't want any calls. Don't call me unless it's my boss. And I was kind of like starting to shut down from others. And also I was in a taxi one day riding uptown to Harlem and my entire right side went numb. Can you imagine being in a taxi and your whole right side went numb? So I went to saw like four doctors that day and had all these MRIs and tests done. And they told me that I was diagnosed with cervical spinal stenosis, which was a direct result of stress. Now, remember, I'm like in my late 30s at this time. This is something that people in their 60s and 70s get diagnosed with. Then my mother developed Alzheimer's. She was back home down south. I felt like I couldn't help out. My uncle passed, one of my uncles who I mentioned that helped to raise me. And I just was going through a lot. And I ended up quitting and making a tough decision and walking away from my job. I was making almost $500,000 a year, something that I had worked my entire life for. And it was hard to walk away from it because, you know, my peers were still doing so well and climbing that ladder of success in the business. And it was just a tough decision. But I ended up coming home back to Atlanta. So when I got back here in 2010, I started doing a lot of community service work just because I felt like I didn't know what God wanted me to be doing with my life at the time. I was struggling mentally. And I wasn't finding joy anymore just in normal life activities. And mind you, I'm still not going to therapy, right? I'm thinking, oh, I'm Shanti Das. And I say that in the most humble way. Mm-hmm. But I thought, I don't need anybody to fix me. I've went to therapy once. I'm good. I can handle it. That was not the case. So fast forward, a couple years went by. I started a live music event in Atlanta called ATL Live on the Park, which was kind of became a staple in the community. But still, I wasn't really feeding into me, right, mentally and physically. And so I remember talking to one of my best friends in 2014 and giving her some advice. She shot herself in the head the very next day. And I knew she was going through some physical health issues, which led to mental health issues. Because oftentimes if we're facing, you know, a disease from a physical perspective, it puts us in a bad place mentally. So I was trying to help her find a new neurologist, help her find a new psychiatrist and therapist. And you can imagine how I felt after that happened. And so I really blamed myself for her suicide. And this is kind of it was a full circle moment because I started going back down on a downward spiral and ended up almost taking my life in 2015. Nothing I'm proud about, but nothing I'm embarrassed about. And I say that to each and every one of the employees from Southern Company listening. Suicide should never be an option. But if you or someone in your family have experienced it, don't shame them. It's nothing that they should be embarrassed about because you're not in your right frame of mind when you're going through that. So that night, I got out of the house because I was afraid of what would happen if I stayed in the house because I had counted up all the pills in my medicine cabinet. And it's funny how things work. I ran into a friend of mine who lives on the other side of town in Atlanta, and she knew something wasn't right when she saw me. And so she encouraged me to call my sister, who I reference a lot because she's like my best friend and confidant and was like a mom to me. She convinced me to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-TALK. And at the same time, I texted my pastor. I'm a member of Ebenezer Baptist Church, so shout out to any Ebenezer members that might be working at Southern Company. Dr. Raphael G. Warnock, who is now Senator Warnock, I texted him, and he and everybody else at the church had been seeing me coming into church the previous Sundays and knew something was wrong as well. He was like, you got to get help this time. He's like, I'll pray with you, but I need you to go to the doctor and really figure out what's going on. So I called my primary healthcare physician that Monday and saw a psychiatrist. And that's how I started on my journey to wellness, finally really taking a hard look and going, okay, something is actually wrong with me. It's okay. I'm going to do what I need to do. Just like I go get my annual checkup from my PCP or, you know, just how we go get our colonoscopies or other right. checkups. It was fine for me to go and get a mental health checkup. And that's just what I did. And then I started sharing a lot on social media about my story and my journey. And I started this little organization. It was actually just a hashtag called Silence to Shame. And now we're doing some really great work in the community. And I use my vulnerability now as a superpower and my transparency as a way to help people open up who might not be so okay with opening up and sharing. And I'm not saying you have to tell all your business on social media, but you have to talk to somebody.
I think you make a good point. Before we get into your wonderful organization, I want to go back because sometimes people think mental health is what you see on TV because there's a myriad of issues that can Absolutely. Come. Some of it is, you know, you have the schizophrenia and you have other
well,
things.
Well, that's considered mental illness.
Mental
right?
illness. Yep. Okay. So let's talk about that. Mental health, mental illness, because part of that is stress, like you said, mm-hmm. and it's bearing things that may get to you that lead to these episodes. It's not just having a mental illness. You can be triggered.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell people all the time, we all have mental health, right? But we may not all have a mental illness. Mental health just is the ability to wake up every day, right? And be able to think well mentally, to be able to get up and go to work and to care for yourself or your loved ones, right? And to perform your duties at work. And so you have to have these certain levels of serotonin that keeps the chemicals balanced in your brain. Right. Our brain is our largest organ and we all have it. That's why I tell people, like, sometimes people will joke, oh, that mental health thing. I'm like, we actually all have mental health because we all have a brain.
That's
and
right.
It's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about. And so sometimes there are things that can happen that lead to quote unquote mental illnesses, i.e. bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder. It's so many, you know, disorders within the spectrum of mental illnesses. And then sometimes those things can be hereditary. That's why it's important to see a psychiatrist to get properly diagnosed. A lot of people don't know the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist is actually a medical doctor. Yep, you go to med school like any other doctor, right? And you do your residency And then you end up seeing patients to properly diagnose them, and you are able to prescribe medication. A psychologist, on the other hand, cannot prescribe medication, but they can do what's called talk therapy or psychotherapy and that sort of thing. And so I think it's important, if someone is seeing a psychiatrist, that they also couple that, right, in terms of their wellness care plan or treatment, with a psychologist, so you can talk through it, because a psychologist can really unpack a lot of what's going on and allow you to open up and share about things that you're not going to get that from a psychiatrist per se. So that's really important. And being able to educate yourselves, there's an organization called the National Council, and they are responsible for what's called mental health first aid training. If you or your organization aren't familiar with it, you know, consider taking the mental health first aid trainings that are available. Prior to the pandemic, they were like 8 hours long, and you can have someone come in and administer it to your team. But imagine, like, you know, you go and take a CPR class. Well, mental health first aid training takes you through everything that you need to know: signs, symptoms, treatment. It goes through all the different mental illnesses that are out there, and it helps you take that information back into your families or communities. And so that's really important to, like, gain the knowledge and really start sharing and creating the awareness, so that we can really do our part, whether it's in the workplace or within our own homes and within our families, to erase the stigma.
So think back, you talked early 2000s and into the mid 2000s when you were going through some of your episodes. When you think about the corporations you work for, mm-hmm. did you know their benefits? Did you know what was available? Was anything available to you?
That is a great question. So the first, I think, larger music corporation that I worked for was Arista Records, which was through BMG. And it's probably going to sound silly or quote unquote ignorant, but I didn't know any better. I didn't know to go to HR if I was having a mental health issue. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't addressed when I signed my deal or when I got hired at the label. We knew we had health insurance. And those types of benefits, but no one ever talked about self-care and mental health. So we weren't aware that it was even an option for us. And so, no, I didn't know to do that. And I ended up going and finding a psychologist on my own. I just kind of Googled them in New York and found, you know, someone to talk to. But nowadays, thank God, obviously, whether it's because of the pandemic or because so many people are opening up now, all of the companies now usually have EAP programs, are employment assistance programs. And they also have just a lot of external resources, right? In addition to the internal resources that may be available for your team. So don't be afraid to go and speak to someone in HR or check out your EAP program and see what's there. And then go to a website like silenceyourshame.com, or the National Alliance on Mental Illness is one of the largest grassroots mental health organizations in our nation. NAMI.org is a fabulous organization. Also, Mental Health America. It's just a plethora of resources out there now. And then if you just, you know, some people, it's still hard to start that conversation around mental health. Just ask your primary health care physician, because 9 times out of 10, where you're getting your physicals now, they may ask you certain questions, right, on the questionnaire about depression or anxiety. So I'm glad to see that, you know, we're integrating mental health into our physical wellness check-ins now, and that's extremely important.
You're listening to the SOPOD Network. Coming up after these messages, Crystal keeps the conversation going with Shanti Dawes. Stay tuned for more. Mental health is healthcare. Southern Company provides mental health treatment for our employees through health plans. Log into your MySource page for more information. If you or someone you know needs help now, you should immediately call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or call 911. Also, you can text SILENCE to 741-741 to get in contact with a crisis counselor to de-escalate a situation.
You mentioned that employee assistance program at Southern Company. We do have that. And
great.
Employees can call that line. That's on our intranet. We also are a family-related organization. You know, we believe in taking care of yourself because you can only be productive if your well-being is intact.
That's right.
You know, we have vacation days. A couple of our team members are sitting in the studio with us today, and I tell them all the time, it is okay to take a day.
Yes.
And we have to all do that. Work will be here. We have a lot of work to do. If you work hard and you do what you're supposed to, taking a day for your mental health is okay.
It's funny. I want to make sure I say this right, but I have friends in Europe, and they always say, "Oh, the Americans, they live to work," you know. And it's like, no, you gotta like live to live, right?
That's right.
And work to live, if you will, and take your vacations because they don't play over in Europe about their vacations. And so sometimes we have to understand, like, yes, taking that mental health day or vacation day or that break with your family, it's so important because we have to pour back into ourselves. You know, a lot of us, we were having a conversation, Crystal, before we got started. So many of us have families or kids, or even if we're single like myself and like you, we're caregivers,
right?
To our grandparents and to our parents. And that can weigh heavily on our mental psyche. So you got to wake up and start your day from a place of peace, especially if we know we have these tough, rigorous schedules. You know, start with meditation. There are some great apps like Headspace or Calm that you can utilize out there, or just getting out and taking a walk. It gets early now, like 6:30 in the morning. You can get outside before it gets hot and take a walk, or you can exercise. It's been proven scientifically that when you start working out and moving, you get your endorphins going. It makes you feel better. Also, immersing yourself outside, that sunlight, that vitamin D actually plays a big part of our mental into our mental psyche. So don't be afraid to do self-care. And sometimes, you know, turning your phone off or just taking a nap. You know, how about this? We were scheduled today to do this. Let's make an appointment with ourselves to take a nap.
Love that.
At 4 o'clock. Let's incorporate wellness into our Google Calendar and into our phone. So this is a part of our everyday vernacular and a part of our schedule, and nothing that we just have to wait for the weekend and do self-care Saturday and self-care Sunday. Let's make self-care a part of every day within the Southern Company.
So what I hear you saying, we have to be intentional.
100%.
About wellness.
Intentionality. No, it's all about
how
intentionality.
How good you feel, you have to be intentional no matter where
have
you are on the spectrum.
Be. It's 100%. Because life is tough. I mean, and we touched a little bit earlier, but, you know, we're still kind of in the pandemic. Not everyone is back in the workplace. The cases of COVID are rising in certain areas. We have mass shootings going on. We have kids, the suicide rates, right, with our younger generation is starting to increase in certain areas. We have wildfires, you know, global warming. It's like it's really stressful right now in the world, right? And I could point to anything that could cause a certain level of, you know, to make our anxiety go up. So, yes, you have to be intentional about making sure you're well.
Yeah. So before we jump into why you founded Silence the Shame, let's talk about social media. Like I said, before we jump into Silence the Shame, what do you think that has done? Because I don't want to age us here, but, you know,
I'm the auntie in the room. It's okay. Y'all can call me Auntie Shanti.
when we were growing up, we didn't have social media.
Right.
And the pressures from social media, and especially with youth, and even though we're a corporation, I mean, we believe in being a citizen wherever we serve and
Absolutely.
Being there to make our communities better. And we have to think about this. We want the youth to grow up and see what we're doing at Southern Company and say, I want to work for a company like that.
Sure.
But as we're looking at them, they have social media. What do you think that pressure is when you think about mental health for even our youth?
So that's a great question, Crystal. And I was recently on a panel discussion for the Carter Center here in Atlanta, and I moderated a youth panel discussion. It was really interesting to hear their perspective because yes, certainly there are, I think, some negative effects that you can pull from our youth kind of growing up in that social media generation, if you will. That idea of perfectionism, right? This constant highlight reel where you feel like you're comparing yourself to your peers and trying to live up to these unrealistic standards, right?
Right.
But then there are also some good things about social media. It's giving them a sense of community to talk to other like-minded, you know, youth and peers. And to hear their stories around social media, the one thing I will say about this younger generation, they're going to be the ones, I think, that really erase stigma across the board because we're seeing so many of them open up, whether it's like a Naomi Osaka or Simone Biles, a lot of young athletes, and just everyday youth are starting to utilize their voice. And I've seen TikTok and Instagram used in good ways around social media. So I think the key is to talk to our kids, right, and the youth, and get them to understand the good parts about social media as well as the bad parts. And parents, you know, if you have children living in your home, don't be afraid to monitor what they're watching or talk to them about what they're watching. I think that's the important thing, too, because a lot of times you think, oh, y'all just don't understand or you don't get us. And so, yeah, parents, you can create a fake TikTok account if you need to. No, I'm being
serious. That's true,
though. Create a fake IG account just to see what your kid is going through.
That's right.
You know, one downside is, you know, there was a young girl 2 weeks ago from Louisiana who posted a suicide note. And she jumped off of a bridge. Mm-hmm. And it was the most heartbreaking thing. And I remember posting about it because I wanted to bring attention to the fact that there's a lot more that needs to be done around suicide awareness. And I ended up, from the recommendation of a friend who also works in mental health, a colleague rather, I took the post down because reposting her note could be triggering or traumatic for others. And so we do have to learn ways to still be on social media and utilize it and talk about mental health so it's not triggering. The other thing I'll say that I thought was negative, like when our nation and our country went through everything that we saw, which happened to the late George Floyd, mm-hmm. is those, you know, the small bites of video and content,
yes.
and rehashing and seeing those images over and over and over again. It is re-traumatizing, right? And it can be a trigger. And so that is another reason why you have to like monitor what your kids are watching on social media and really be a part of the conversation with them.
Yeah. So as you talk about kids and a lot of things, what you just said too, goes to adults, right?
Absolutely.
So talk about why Silence the Shame and why you picked that name and how you are advocating fearlessly today.
So I was doing a radio interview years ago with Brian Cameron, who was on V103 at the time. And we were talking about mental health and he knew about my dad's suicide and it just kind of rolled off of my tongue. I was like, yeah, you know, I don't know what the big deal is. Like, why are people so embarrassed if they're not feeling good mentally? We should just silence the shame. And I was like, wait a minute. So I had to put that marketing hat back on from the music industry. And I was like, okay, I think this is my platform. This is it. And so I ended up utilizing a hashtag. And so May rolled around, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I said, I'm going to make up my own day. And I just made May 5th National Silence to Shame Day and created a little Instagram post to see if anyone would repost. So I sent it to a couple artists I used to work with, Usher, Big Boy, a couple folks. We got 90 million impressions in one day.
That's amazing.
And this was before people were really talking about mental health. And so I was like, okay, like I got to take this a step further. And so ended up forming our 501c3. We've done work with Jack and Jill of America Incorporated, the Atlanta Hawks, National Football Players Association, AIDS Healthcare Foundation, you know, so many wonderful organizations. And, you know, it's an honor to do this work, but it's really going to take the whole community. You know, we have to come together and, again, keep erasing stigma. And that's why I'm so grateful that you all had me on your podcast, because it starts in the home. It starts in the community. It starts in our churches and synagogues and so many other places that we worship. And it has to become a part of our everyday vernacular so that we talk about it. So it's not a thing, so that people aren't embarrassed, so that the culture within the workplace changes, too. One of the things we do at Silence to Shame are workplace wellness trainings. You know, it's extremely important to learn how to talk to your employees about mental health as managers and as leaders within a company like Southern Company. You know, you have to have a certain level of compassion and empathy. We don't need you to feel sorry for us if we're having a tough time, but just come from a place of empathy and don't try to judge us and let it be okay if that person needs to take a day to either find support and find help or to reset.
Now, I know neither of us is a physician or a medical professional, so we want to put that out there first. But, you know, as we're working and we're, you know, some people have come back into the office, others are coming in working hybrid schedules. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about if you see something. What are we looking for? If you see, if I'm sitting next to one of my colleagues, you know, what should we be on the lookout for and how do we support? Because like you said, sometimes it's having empathy, but how do we support?
That's a great question. And so I always caution people not to try to be, right, the therapist or the clinician. But in terms of just being able to support, you can go up to someone and instead of, you know how we casually will like meet in the kitchen or, you know, maybe at the elevator and say, hey, Bob, or hey, Kathy, hey, whatever, how's your day going or how are you? And you just kind of expect them to say, oh, I'm good. See you later. Instead, just say, how are you feeling today? It's a lot going on. I know this has been a tough week for all of us. How are you feeling? How are you coping? So I think by starting the dialogue that way, it automatically kind of creates a safe space for that person to maybe want to open up and share. Or if you have some helpful information, say, you know, I read a really good article that I think you might like. So being able to kind of like gently provide them with resources and information, and just letting them know, even, and they may not open up, but maybe you kind of see them sad or down or kind of withdrawing socially, even in the office. And you can say, you know what, if you ever need to talk, I'm here to listen. Because oftentimes we just need an ear. We don't need anyone to fix us. Sometimes we're having a tough day and we just need to get it out and vent. And maybe within that conversation, we can share resources, or we can just allow that person to kind of get it off their chest and talk about it so that that stress doesn't, you know, fester and then manifest itself, you know, into a more severe mental illness or a physical illness.
That's a good point. Shame. Let's just concentrate on that word just a little bit. Why is there shame around mental illness in your mind?
Because stigma is still prevalent. You know, that C word is still out there so heavy. How many times do we see something that happens either within our own families or things on TV and like, oh my gosh, they're crazy. We all use that word, and I try not to use it because I just feel like words matter. We also look at social media when everybody's profile is seemingly perfect, and but they're only posting, right, the stuff that they want us to see, that supposedly the really cool stuff or the good stuff. And that's all a facade. But people don't want to feel like something is wrong with them. I mean, point blank, we all want everybody to see the best in us. And that's just not the case. But, you know, shame is still very prevalent, I think, in every generation and every nationality. But I do think we're starting to peel back those layers of shame so that we can erase stigma. That's why these mental health conversations, whether it's in the workplace, in your home, in your place of worship, it is crucially important.
Okay. Well, you've given us some great resources. I know one thing I was doing some research is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is changing to a 3-digit number in July. Mm-hmm. I think it's launching July 16th, 988. So it's easy to remember. You know, the 1-800 number will always be there that you gave earlier. You still call that now, but as of July 16th, you dial 988.
Yes.
And you're directly connected.
That is so fantastic. Just like calling 911, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to remember. And it's so important that people know that those resources are out there.
As we close out, you've given us wonderful resources. You've talked about compassion and empathy and making sure we listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody says, oh, I'm okay, sometimes don't ignore that. We need to just say, again, we're not doctors.
Because they
not
may
here
say
to
they're
fix.
Okay, but their actions show otherwise.
So we just need to be more present and just be more observant when we see somebody down, just to say, can I help you? Or are you okay?
Absolutely.
As we close out, you know, what are your thoughts, or what positive thoughts do you want to leave someone who's listening to this podcast that may be going through something, that may have had the same thought that you had back in 2015? You know, what do you say to them?
I think some of my final thoughts for anyone that may be, you know, having thoughts of suicide or doubt or just feeling really down, the most important thing I would say to you is it's okay to open up and talk to somebody. There is absolutely nothing to be embarrassed about. You know, there are people within the organization that you can go to confidentially, or you should have a family member. I tell people, you know, because what I like to do is I have my starting five. You might say, well, what is the starting five and what does that mean? So my starting five are like five really cool people in my life that I know I can talk to if anything is going on, whether it is a parent or a spouse or a friend or a colleague or a doctor or, you know, my yoga instructor. I need five people that I know I can have on speed dial that will always pick up if I need them. So I would say surround yourself again with people who love you and are compassionate about you and that won't judge you. That is super important. And just like you go to the doctor for anything else, going to the doctor for your mental health is actually not a bad thing. And the other thing I want people to know is that therapy isn't just for when something is wrong. You know, now I have a standing appointment with my therapist, whether I had a good week or not. And sometimes, you know, because I lost my sister unexpectedly in 2019 to a blood clot. And then I just lost my mother in January. So one thing we really didn't touch on today is grief. And we lost almost 1 million people in the pandemic. So many people are grieving still through all of this. And that's tough. And so sometimes, you know, I'm sad and I'm talking to my therapist, or sometimes I'm having a great week, but a therapist can just, if you find the right one, can really help you throughout your daily regimen and just give you a good perspective. So you don't have to go see a therapist only when something is wrong. Like, be okay with that. Understanding also that boundaries are a complete blessing. You have to be able to set professional boundaries as well as personal boundaries for yourself when you're at the home. Even if you're a mother or father of three or four, sometimes you got to tell, if you're the wife, you got to say, okay, honey, I need an hour for myself. And whatever I choose to do with that hour, you know, talking to my therapist, taking a bath, meditating, lighting a candle, sitting in silence, just kind of downloading the day and figuring out what I need from a wellness perspective. You owe yourself that time. So you have to be 100% okay with setting boundaries for yourself. And I could keep going on and on and on, but just know that boundaries are a complete blessing, and actually therapy is really cool. Sometimes it's like dating. You might have to keep swiping until you find the right one. It's nothing to be ashamed about.
I think that's great. I'm going to join our good friend Ryan Cameron. Shout out to Ryan Cameron in Atlanta. Since you said silence to shame, I think you need to go ahead and coin boundaries are a blessing.
Okay.
I mean, that I had to write that down.
Thank you.
I want to, before we close out, to say, for all those who are listening, if you need help, get it, just like Shanti said. But for those who work at Southern Company, we do have an employee assistance line. Our HR department, headed by Sloan Drake, have a great program installed for us. So if you need help, there are things there. Go to my source. Don't be afraid. And I thank Shanti for having the vision and the purpose to advocate for silencing the shame and for mental health. So for that purpose, we love you. We thank you. We thank you for taking time out of your busy day to stop by the SoPod Network.
It has been an absolute pleasure. And I do want to leave you with one other resource. If you're in crisis and can't get to anyone, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you can text the word silence, S-I-L-E-N-C-E, to 741-741 and be connected with a crisis counselor. And then they can put you in touch with a therapist in your area. The Crisis Text Line Organization is an incredible national organization that does a great job of de-escalating the crisis and connecting you to care.
And that text number can work wherever you are in the country?
Yep, anywhere in the country. Text the word silence, S-I-L-E-N-C-E, to 741-741. It's not in place of therapy, but it helps to de-escalate the crisis until you can see a licensed clinical professional.
I think that's awesome. Thank you again for joining the SoPod Network. You got to come back.
I would love to.
We're going to keep talking about mental health because we all need it. So
yes, we do.
So we all
and we all have it.
Yep. Yes. There you go.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the SoPod Network. Remember, you can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Google podcast platforms.